I wonder if you've ever been working toward something, aiming for something, anticipating something, and it is something that you're really excited about or looking forward to, and yet you have this kind of secret fear that maybe you'll get there and you'll find that it wasn't all that it was cracked up to be. Maybe an accomplishment, a recognition, an award that you're working toward, maybe a degree or a professional certification or a position or a skill. Maybe it's trying to reach a particular destination. Maybe it's a vacation or maybe it's trying to reach a certain season of the year or season of your life. Graduation, wedding, birth of a child or grandchild, retirement. You look forward to those things. You work toward those things, and yet, you know, sometimes we might have that unspoken concern that what if we get there and it's not what we thought it would be? I thought, as I considered that question, I thought of my high school graduation, which was just a few years ago. And I remember getting to that milestone, and I desperately wanted the ceremony to be outside. So in our school, typically the ceremony was at the football stadium and it was outdoors, unless there was bad weather, in which case it would move indoors to the gym. Well, I really wanted it to be outside so that family members, friends who were in other grades or were at other schools could be part of the ceremony. If it was indoors in the gym, we had exactly two tickets, which would have meant just my parents seeing me reach this milestone of getting my diploma. So I'm watching the weather all week, and I'll admit, even praying a little bit, that the weather would be nice the day of graduation. We get to the day. Weather looks a little iffy, but the day goes on. It's clearing up. The sun is shining, and so the word is given. The ceremony will be outside. And so we process out with pomp and circumstance and start to go through the ceremony. And as we're sitting there and we're going through all of the stuff, you start to see some dark clouds gathering in the sky. And the wind starts to pick up. And before long, you can actually hear the wind blowing through the microphone. They get to the diploma part. And it turned out that in the processional, I was on the early end. So they start to hand out diplomas, and they got through my diploma. So, friends, family that were there got to cheer and everything. And then we got maybe 20 or 25 people into the handing out of the diplomas. And the principal steps up and says, "There is a storm coming, and so we are going to have to move this indoors." And so they literally stopped the ceremony right in the middle. Now, the thing was, they stopped it too late because, people were getting nervous and you're watching the clouds blow in and the wind is blowing, and they stopped it too late. And so they said, "Okay, we're going to dismiss and reconvene in the gym." Well, by the time they did that, within probably 2 minutes of that, as some of our Dutchie friends would say, it started making dawn. And it was pouring. And so, it was kind of free for all, every man for himself. People are just running all over the place. And I heard later that my parents were actually kind of dragging my grandma, trying to get her to move faster to the car as it's pouring. And so we gathered in the auditorium to start. The graduates did. The power went out at one point. Eventually, it came back on. We processed again into the gym with our two guests each and continued with the ceremony. Well, I'm glad to say that ceremony exceeded my expectation in every possible way. I got my diploma outside. Sorry for those that didn't, but I got mine outside where everyone who was there could see it. And, it was the most memorable graduation ceremony ever. I wish some others would have a thunderstorm disrupt them sometime. Well, here we are. We've come to the end of our summer walkthrough of the book of Ecclesiastes. And we've been going through the teacher is the one who communicates these words to us. We've been going through his words, and we come to the very end, and you might wonder, after all that we've worked our way through, how do you land the plane here? How do you have a solid ending that doesn't disappoint? Bono, who is known as the lead singer of the band U2, also a well-known Christian, commented once on Ecclesiastes. He said, "Ecclesiastes is one of my favorite books. It's about a character who wants to find out why he's alive, why he was created. And you hurry to the end of the book to find out why." And he says, "In a way, it's such a letdown. But yet, in a way, it's not," says Bono. So he reached the end and had mixed feelings. Well, Pastor Amanda just read the end of the Ecclesiastes message for us. And I wonder how you feel about the end. Well, let me take you back. If you were with us, you might remember we started with chapter 1 and read these verses very early on. "Meaningless, meaningless," says the teacher. "Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless." And then we come to chapter 12, verse 8. And we read, "Meaningless, meaningless. Everything is meaningless." And you might wonder, have we gone anywhere? I mean, we're kind of back where we started with the teacher talking about the meaninglessness of life. In other translations, it talks about the vanity of vanities. And you might remember that early on, I said the word picture that the teacher gives us is that life is just like that smoke. It's here and it's gone. It's a vapor. It's lacking substance. Well, is that where we are? Well, I mean, the teacher has walked us through different aspects of our lives and has concluded, yeah, they can seem meaningless. I mean, work can be meaningless. Chapter 1, the teacher says, what do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? All of them are meaningless at chasing after the wind. And you might say, well, yeah, okay, work can feel that way. It's kind of a grind sometime. So what about pleasure? And the teacher says, you know, that's no better. I mean, the teacher tried all kinds of things for pleasure, tried women and wine and music, building parks and palaces, orchards and vineyards, animals and slaves to tend them, silver and gold. He says in chapter 2, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. But ultimately, nothing was gained under the sun. He looked to wisdom and knowledge, and it was the same. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief, he says. He tried power and money, and the teacher who was voicing from the perspective of Solomon, the great king of Israel, he had a lot of power and he had a lot of money. And his conclusion was they're nice for a time, but keeping them is awful stressful. And losing them is painful. So whatever you have, whatever you pursue, whatever you are able to keep in this life that we live under the sun, it's only good as long as we live. Because the survey says, ding, 10 out of 10 people will die. And will take none of it with them. And that's really where we end in Ecclesiastes 12, the first 7 verses. We have this beautiful poem with metaphors for us about what it's like to age. You know, grinders talking about teeth and grasshoppers and these kind of this word picture of aging. But the end result, according to verse 7, is the dust returns to the ground it came from, that is our bodies, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. And so the teacher says everything is meaningless, it's vanity, it's smoke. Now, the good news, he says, is along the way, we can experience reminders of joy and satisfaction. I mean, we can eat and drink, and even if our labor feels toilsome, we can find satisfaction in it. We're told that there are good times amidst the hard, times to heal and to harvest, times to laugh and to dance. We're told that we can rejoice in whatever prosperity God gives us and enjoy whatever life we have with the ones we love. So he's given us two views here. On one hand, meaningless vanity smoke. On the other hand, well, there's still joy to be found. What is the teacher trying to do? Well, here in the conclusion in chapter 12, the teacher tells us what he's trying to do. In verses 10 and 11, he kind of steps outside himself and says, it says, the teacher searched to find just the right words, and what he wrote was upright and true. The words of the wise are like goads. You know what a goad is? It's like a cattle prod. Do I have a volunteer who'd like to come up and help me test this? Just kidding. These words are like a cattle prod. I mean, the teacher is trying to poke at us a little bit, to prod us in a certain direction. And we see just where that direction is in verses 13 and 14. We see the conclusion that he has come to after all of these chapters and reflections. All has been heard. Here's the conclusion of the matter. He says, fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. So there it is. That's what we've been building toward. And I wonder what your response is. Be interesting to talk about that. You know, is that kind of a wow, you know, this is where we've ended up, aha moment? Or is it kind of a, well, yeah, okay, I kind of would have expected us to go there. That's not that exciting. Well, let's talk about this for the moments we have left. This conclusion that the teacher comes to. Let's break it up. Starts with fear God. Fear God. You know, the most frequent command in the Bible is do not fear. Do not be afraid. By one count, 145 times in the scriptures, we have that command that we are not to be afraid. And yet, the teacher says here, and not the teacher himself, but others as well say that there's one thing we should fear, or one person we should fear. Fear God. Now, what does that mean? Are we supposed to be afraid of God? I mean, like some people are afraid of heights and public speaking and creepy crawlies in the basement. Is that the kind of fear that we're supposed to have? Well, I don't think so, because, you know, that kind of fear makes you pull back. I mean, when you see that spider running across the floor, for some of you, your tendency is not to move toward it. Fear sends us away, and the teacher wants us to draw close to God, and the teacher wants us to find peace and joy, but our fears will tend to erode those. So that must not be it. It must not be to be afraid. It rather is what one church father called filial fear. Filial fear is the kind of fear that a child might have toward a parent. And you say, well, but wait, kids shouldn't be afraid of their parents. And yes, they should not be terrified of their parents, for sure. They should not, they should not fear harm from their parents. We recognize that. And yet, there is a kind of fear that a child should have toward a parent, or not even just a parent, maybe toward a grandparent or a teacher or a mentor. It's a kind of respect, admiration, even a warmth and appreciation, but kind of mixed with awe. That's the kind of fear that the teacher's talking about. Another illustration of that, Christopher Lee is a name that will be familiar to some of you. He passed away a few years ago. He's an English actor, author, singer. If you don't know the name Christopher Lee, some of you might know Count Dooku from the Star Wars prequels, or Saruman from the Lord of the Rings trilogy of films. Christopher Lee read the original novels, The Lord of the Rings, and was mesmerized by them. He thought they were the greatest works of literature ever. Just so drawn in was he by these books. Well, then one day he is in the Eagle and Child pub in Oxford. And who should walk into the pub but J.R.R. Tolkien himself? And Lee says, I mean, he almost fell out of his chair when he sees this man who wrote these books that he has so long admired. And Lee said later on, years later, when he was acting in the movies, after that experience of seeing and meeting Tolkien, he found himself thinking about, you know, what would Tolkien have thought of the movie? What would he have thought of the acting here? How would he have seen Saruman, Lee's character, responding? And that impression, that kind of awe, that reverence, that admiration stayed with him and continued to affect him years later. If you can imagine that, now we're getting somewhere in understanding the fear of God. So one more time, let me offer you some observations about what it means to go beyond life under the sun. That is just life in this earth. What does that look like based on what the teacher says here? And the first one really is just what Pastor Jade Helonius calls living in the wonder of God. That's what it means to fear God. I love that picture of fearing God. It's living in the wonder of God. To be amazed by him, to be impressed by him, by his beauty, by his power, by his love. It's a posture of awe and wonder and delight, maybe even to be overwhelmed a bit by God, but yet to want to draw close to him. It's to never want to hurt or disappoint him, to never want to make him sad or mad. That's the fear of God. That's living in the wonder of God. And I wonder how you're doing with that one. Do you ever, as you're thinking or praying or reading the scriptures, you have moments of feeling awe and amazement as you connect with God in those ways? Or is it all duty, no beauty when you do those things? If we want to go beyond this under the sun life, he invites us to take steps to live in the wonder of God. For some of you, perhaps recapture a sense of wonder at who this God is and what he has done and what he continues to do and what he will do. If you say to yourself, well, you know, I don't really experience that kind of wonder when I'm just thinking or praying or reading or whatever, I want to just point you to one resource that we have. We're going through the year doing this Go Deep series of sermons. And in one sense, that's really all about living in the wonder of God. It's trying to open up doors of opportunity for you, whoever you are, however you're wired, what your personality and interests are, to experience the wonder of God in a way that is true to you. And next Sunday, we have another one of those sermons. We're working our way through them over the course of the year. Fear God. Live in the wonder of God. That's the first thing. The second thing, the teacher says, fear God and keep his commandments. Now, what do you do with that? I mean, is the teacher saying, so there are 613 commandments in the Old Testament. Is the teacher saying, you know, start memorizing? You know, make your checklist every day and, you know, check, 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 check. Is that what God wants? Does he want, is compliance to the rules, is that what he's really after? You know, Jesus, in his teachings, talked a little bit about the law. And on one occasion he said, you know, if you really want to sum up all of the laws, if you want to kind of cut to the chase, get to the heart of them all, you really could hang all of them on just two. Love God, love your neighbor. And so I would suggest to you, if we want to fear God and keep his commandments, to go beyond this under the sun life, then yes, let's live in the wonder of God, but let's also live out the love of God. Live out the love of God. The Apostle John, some years after the time of Jesus, wrote, "We love because he, God, first loved us." We have the opportunity to reciprocate the love that he has shown us back to him. And that will naturally ripple out in love for others. And so I wonder, how is your, I'll call it, your love meter today? How is your love meter? Out of love, are you taking seriously what God asks of us? In these days when it seems like we don't trust any voice of authority, it's kind of a countercultural thing to say, we need to obey God. We need to keep his commandments. And yet his commandments ultimately really are his gift of wisdom to us. They're wisdom for our lives, given to us out of love, and he longs for us to obey him out of love. And that obedience is not only for our own good, but for the good of others. Are you living out the love of God? Are you living in wonder of him? And ultimately, the teacher says we do this in verse 14, because God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether good or evil. Now, if you've gone through this book of Ecclesiastes with us, and you've been feeling like this teacher can really be a downer, well, then he maybe ends the way you would expect him to end, by talking about judgment. And when we talk about judgment, when we think about judgment, we tend to think of it in a very negative light all the time, don't we? And yet it's interesting the way some in Bible days thought of judgment. One of the psalmists writes these words, "Like your name, O God, your praise reaches to the ends of the earth. Your right hand is filled with righteousness. Mount Zion rejoices. The villages of Judah are glad because of your judgments." Who can be glad because of judgment? Well, consider these scenarios. Imagine someone who is terribly, criminally wronged by someone else. And they finally have their day in court. And they show up in court, and the judge isn't there. No judge. Or imagine working hard all semester in class. You study for every test. You write every paper. You do all the homework, early even. You participate in class discussion. You do everything that you're supposed to. You get to the end of the class, and you're wondering what your grade is, and the teacher says, "Well, you know, this class was about learning, so I wasn't keeping grades." Or imagine playing a hard-fought, back-and-forth championship game of volleyball or fill-in-the-blank, your favorite sport. You know, it's the championship. You're going back and forth. You know, it's a close game, and you get to the end of the game, and there was no scorekeeper. And so, well, you know, we don't know who won. What does it really matter? It's just for love of the game, right? Sometimes we need a judge. Sometimes we need a scorekeeper. We need someone who can make sure that things turn out the way they're supposed to turn out. I like what Zach Eswine says on this subject. He says, "For many of us, judgment scares, threatens, and spooks us. But for the teacher, judgment blesses us. The sort of glory we sought and the life with God that we disregarded or clung to will be made known. Illusions flee, pretensions evaporate, secret evils are exposed, but so are secret goods. Noble moments and people rescued by grace but long overlooked and disregarded are hidden no more. God's judgment not only condemns, it also finally vindicates. While many today rail against the idea of judgment in the name of tolerance, I would make the case that without God, and specifically without a God who says that some things are good and some things are not, there would be no such thing as justice. And what's more, commentator Philip Raken adds, if there is no God and therefore no final judgment, then it is hard to see how anything we do really matters. But if there is a God who will judge the world, then everything, everything matters. And so that's where I would leave you this morning. If we want to go beyond the under the sun life, let's remember that everything in our lives matters to him. It all matters. How's that for a prod? Now, Jesus modeled for us a life of wonder and love. And he showed us how much our human lives matter by taking one on. And then he overcame death by death so that we could live forever. Well, if you find the teacher's conclusion a bit, on the surface, underwhelming, I hope you've been jabbed a little bit this morning to recognize that in the face of the Almighty God, we have a supreme cause to live in wonder and to live out the kind of love that is our God's essence. And there is both great hope and great challenge for us in recognizing how much our little lives matter. May we experience that today and this week. Would you pray with me? Awesome God, we live lives that, in the harsh realities of this world, can seem brief and full of trouble and without meaning. We can feel like we're toiling under the sun, chasing the wind, surrounded by mysteries that we can't decipher. And yet in the midst of doubt and discouragement and confusion, voices like the teachers call us to look beyond the sun, to see that for the few days of life we have, from your hand, we are given so many gifts. We are given the wonder of relationships where there's surprising strength in a three-stranded cord. We are given the ability to eat and drink, to do good and find satisfaction in our toil. We are offered wisdom and knowledge, happiness and gladness of heart. And we can receive the promise that somehow, in time, beauty can be seen in the most surprising places. Oh Lord, in spite of the things we don't know and can't understand, you've built it into our hearts to grasp that there is more to life than just what we can see and know in the here and now. And you've promised that a day is coming when all that is wrong will be set right. May we live in light of these realities. May we enjoy your gifts and see beyond them to you, the giver, remembering you in every season of our lives, living in the wonder and reverent fear you deserve. Living out the love that connects us to you and everyone else. And may we do it all in the almighty name of the one who has opened up our ordinary human lives to these truths in his extraordinary life, our Savior, Jesus. In his name we ask it. Amen.